This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Boston Loose Baseball episode 112 comes your way. The Nationals just swept a series for the first time since 2019, dominating the Marlins for four games. We'll discuss. CJ Abrams is on a tear. Young pitching looks good. Speaking of young, Jacob Young is a stud. We got a lot to break down, and it all starts on Boston Loose Baseball episode 112 right now.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
Break up the Nats. They have won four in a row, a four-game sweep for the first time since they swept the Phillies in five games in September of 2019, barreling into the playoffs. Of course, that led to eventually the postseason and then making their World Series run. This time around, they are just at the end of April on the calendar, one and a half out of the wild card, after making quick work of the Marlins. And Toby, I'm sure a lot of people will try to dismiss this and say, oh, Miami's 6-24 and they're 2-15 at home. And don't get me wrong, this is a terrible ball club playing really bad baseball, and it's pretty outrageous that their record is what it is. But this is a team that's given the Nats fits even when they've been bad. The Nats could not buy a win against them over the last couple of seasons. So hard not to be impressed by them going and getting a four-game sweep.
Yeah, I mean, and the Nationals are supposed to be in that same tier for all intents and purposes, right? They're supposed to be in that same sort of area where this should have been an even matchup. I mean, the Nats on paper were probably better, but it's not like it's something where you expected a four-game sweep. So you got to give the boys credit. They went down there and battled, and like you said, you know, it's a division rival that has seemed to always give the Nats fits, and luckily they went down there and took care of business, and in a fun way to watch, right, Grant? I mean, all over the base paths, running all over the place, hitting home runs. Like, it just looked like a good baseball team, and they're back to 500 now. And I think the proof is in the pudding that I know a lot of people freak out after one game and it happened after opening day, but this is a team that is going to be like what we saw last season in the second half. That was a competitive ball club. Are they going to win, you know, 85 games? Probably not, but they're probably going to hang with a lot of ball clubs. We've seen them take series from the Giants, from the Dodgers. Now they sweep the Marlins. Like, they can go toe-to-toe with the good teams as well. So I think this season, you know, it's only 28 games in, but it's been a lot of fun already.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to remember, especially with everyone, I'm sure, going to now be diminishing and belittling them getting to 500 here because they swept the Marlins in four after getting swept by the Dodgers. But they've actually won series against good teams. And one of the storylines before the season, if you go back, you remember, was how treacherous their early season schedule was. Like, that April was going to be particularly brutal. They had the Astros, and they've got the Rangers coming up now to finish. But, you know, the Dodgers and the West Coast trip where you're going out to San Francisco and just some, like, an enviable places to have to go and some pretty good teams that they were playing. And they got a chance. Right now, they're a game over 500 in April with one to play to have a winning month. You know, that was not on the bingo card. Forget what Vegas thought. I mean, the odds on this team's win total was like 65 or 66. And I'm not claiming victory here, but I think most of us, like real ones, knew that's pretty ridiculous. You could put some money down and probably win on that future bet. This, to me, is a low 70s win team. They're on pace, obviously, for 81, and I think they'll come back to earth here a little bit. It's early enough in the season that four games would go before this sweep. If you looked at the pace, it would have looked a lot different, right? But That having been said, I just think, you know, this is a 10-6 team on the road. They're scrappy. They are not a fun team to have to play. I think some of the young pitching, and we'll go through the report card here after, you know, a month into the season, but whether it's Jake Irvin, obviously Mitchell Parker, the contributions he's giving, you know, those guys have been a little better than expected. Trevor Williams has been marvelous. Mackenzie Gore minus an outing has been very, very good. So the rotation's been solid. The bullpen has mostly been, I would say, above average. Certainly the key ingredients to it, who you actually count on, not the underbelly that's going to get cut open every now and then. But it's been pretty good. And then your stars in the lineup, C.J. Abrams among them, have carried the day. So there's a lot to like here as this team's won 6 of 10 and is potentially going to be sitting on the right side of 500 as the calendar turns to May.
Yeah, and I think it's super fun because this is a ball club that going into the year, Davey talked about it in spring training, they were going to run all over the place and they were going to do all these different things, and they've carried it over. I mean, you know, as we taped this on Monday night, you got C.J. Abrams basically stealing home on a wild pitch. You had Trey Lipscomb steal home on a double steal with, I believe it was Ildemar Vargas or someone earlier in the series against the Marlins. And it wasn't just this series. They've done all sorts of things. They've bought into this identity that, you know, they're not going to be a mashing team, even though C.J. Abrams now has 7 home runs. They're not going to be some team that's top 5 in the league in homers, so they're going to make up for it by Jacob Young stealing bags all over the place. Lane Thomas, before he got hurt, was stealing bags all over the place. And CJ really hasn't even been able to join the party because of all his extra base hits. So I think it's been really cool to see this team see that its identity is going to be being very aggressive on the base paths, and they've lived up to it.
The Nationals have 52 stolen bases right now. Only one other team has more than 33 in Major League Baseball. I mean, pretty astounding how aggressively they've been running, and not just with the frequency, but the success rate as well, which we'll get into in just a bit. But let's talk about C.J. Abrams. Homered again tonight, as you mentioned, his 7th of the season. He is now at 100 at-bats, 11 walks and 12 strikeouts, 6 steals. You know, frankly, that's really low compared to expectations, but it's hard to steal second when you're constantly in the dugout on a home run or at second or third on an extra base hit. He's got 5 doubles and 4 triples. So on the season, 16 of his 30 hits are for extra bases, over half of his hits, which is why he's slugging .634, top 5 in the league. His OPS is over 1,000. His batting average is sitting at .297. You know, last year it took him over 70 games to hit 70 home runs. He's done it now this season in game 25. We are seeing, you know, we've over-talked about him as a star and as a superstar, but we are seeing the beginning now of he's playing not at a star level, but a legitimate elite MVP caliber level. I mean, that's not overstated. Now, he's not going to win an MVP award on this Nationals team this season, but I guess my point is, if he plays at this level on a first division team, that's how you win an MVP award. We're talking about a guy who is on pace to go out and hit, you know, close to 40 home runs and steal 35 bases or whatever it is. Like, this is pretty incredible performance for him. And I think people just forget, like, last year was good growth. He went from a 600 OPS in 2022 to a 715 OPS. But you're seeing now another monster leap here. And I have no delusions of him having a 1,000 OPS for the year or staying on this, you know, 7 homer pace, which would mean he hits 45 home runs. But if he hits 28, let's say, if he even 25 and he steals, you know, 45 bases and his OPS is 900, you know, that is a all-star, really special season. And if he could string those together, you're talking about one of the best players in baseball.
Yeah, I think it's just so encouraging because if you've watched him, you know, you can't even see just obviously his numbers look fantastic, but just watching him, it looks like it's something that's repeatable. You know, it's a consistent approach, and basically any knock you could have on him from last year, he's kind of worked on, and he's hitting fastballs, he's hitting lefties, He's hitting line drives. He's pulling the ball a little bit more just because I think that's his natural motion, but he's doing things that are sustainable. Like if you can hit the fastball, that's always going to play. If you can hit lefty-lefty, that's always going to play. If you can hit line drives all over the place, sometimes you'll hit into hard luck. But for the most part, that's good process, and balls are going to fall, and occasionally you're going to hit them over the wall. And just you look at the homer on Monday night, that's an absolute laser to right field that, yeah, sometimes that's just going to ring off the wall for a double. But you can live with those because that's something that you feel is consistent. And so I think that's the most encouraging part. It's not something where it's like, well, he's getting away with some of this stuff. It's kind of just good luck. No, I mean, this is stuff that feels sustainable just because of the way he's swinging the bat, his consistent approach, and it's come over to his defense as well. For the most part, he's thrown the ball very well from short over to first, which is something that I was concerned about losing Dominic Smith. We talked about it before the season. He bounced a lot of balls over there. It hasn't been as much of a case this year. And so I think just the overall confidence level has grown to a point where he feels like he's a dude in this league and he's playing like it. And it's really cool to see because obviously we've talked about him. We talked about him before the season. We're going to talk about him basically every pod of this season. Like we're fired up about CJ Abrams. MLB Network is fired up about CJ Abrams. That's the kind of recognition that's really cool to see for him to get because he clearly put in work this offseason and he's showing out early this season and he's getting recognition, not just by us, but nationally as well.
Well, they should be talking about him every night. I mean, he is playing at a level really only exceeded at shortstop by Mookie Betts right now in all of baseball. I'm glad you mentioned left on left, Toby, because I think that's super important. He is hitting 400 against lefties right now, 405, 13 for 32 on the season, 3 of his 7 home runs left on left, 9 of his 17 RBIs left on left. He has an 875 slug, a 1316 OPS against left-handed pitching. You know, stuff that just frankly you shouldn't really be doing, but he is. And I think that's maybe the most important part of his season is for a young left-handed hitter to have started the year 13 of 32 against left-handed pitching really is incredible.
Yeah, and I think Franny was really good on the broadcast tonight. You know, he obviously hits the home run earlier in the game, but his last at-bat, he hits just a line drive. It ends up being an out to left field, but it's a lefty-lefty slider down and away, and he stays with it, hits a line drive out there. Like, if he can continue to do those sorts of things, obviously that one didn't end up in a hit, but that's what I'm talking about where the process just looks so good for CJ right now, where sometimes that's going to go over the wall. Sometimes it's going to hit off the wall. Sometimes it's going to be a double down in the corner. Like those sorts of things seem repeatable. And that's what I think is so encouraging for CJ is it doesn't seem like a flash in the pan where, you know, he just got hot for a month. Cause we saw that last year with him. He got hot in the month of July and he was awesome the rest of the year, but it wasn't to that same extent. I'm not saying every month is going to be like this month of April for him, but it seems a lot more sustainable where it's like he grew as a player as opposed to he's just on a hot streak.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Also of note for the Nationals here in this stretch has been Jacob Young, who I'm going to hurt myself patting myself on the back here for a moment, but this has been my guy since he was in Fredericksburg as really a non-prospect. And I have no real thoughts that he is, you know, even a maybe a starter ultimately on this team. Because the way that you want it to work out is James Wood, Dylan Cruz, Robert Hassel, you know, somebody, maybe it's still Lane Thomas or what have you, like that they're outfielders are not Jacob Young and that he's an extra piece. He's a speed and defense guy who can spell guys a couple days a week and start on the weekends or whatever. But I've just loved this guy's game. You know, listed 5'11". I don't know if he's that tall. Maybe 187, 190 pounds. Not going to hit a lot of power, but, you know, probably 8, 9, 10 home runs over 162 games with the baseball wound as tight as they are in the big leagues. But he's hitting 330 right now. It's a lot of contact. The ball's constantly in play. He does not have a home run yet or in his career for that matter in now about 170 at-bats, but he is hitting 325. And as I said, his career average is now up to 281. You see him at a 760 OPS. I haven't looked up recently what the league average is, but generally it's, you know, 715, 720, something like that. You know, you're talking about being 40 points above league OPS average at this point. And, you know, he's done it in a way where now he's starting to get to play every day. That wasn't happening initially, and so it's hard. But if you look at this four-game series against the Marlins, 2-for-3, 2-for-4, 3-for-5, 1-for-4. If you look at his stolen base chart in this series against the Marlins, he has stolen 2 bases in a row in 3 straight games, 6 in his last 3. He already on the season has 12 steals without being thrown out. In fact, he's got one of the longest streaks in the history of Major League Baseball, and the new rules obviously help here. But he's 25-for-25 dating back to last year in stolen base attempts. He's got Trey Turner-ish type speed. Just a blast to watch. I love the kid. He just plays so hard. Hair on fire. My kind of guy. 24-year-old who's really, I think, fans have taken note on. It's hard not to root for a guy who plays the way he does and is undersized and is kind of the non-elite prospect who comes up and gives you everything he's got.
Yeah, he's perfectly encapsulates what this team right now is all about, right? Just a guy working hard, going out there and putting it all on the line and stealing bags all over the place. And, you know, I don't know what his future is because, like you said, eventually down the line it's going to be the prospects taking up the outfield. But this is a guy that for right now, and maybe even into when Wood gets called up, maybe when a Cruz can find a spot batting in the 8 or the 9 hole, being that guy that hits around 250, gets on base, and steals bags. I mean, this is something that's nice for C.J. Abrams, where last year it was like, all right, C.J.'s leading off. There's no one ever on base. Now it's, oh, Jacob Young's on base. And he had one tonight where C.J. got a stolen base because Jacob Young took off for third. Catcher couldn't even get a throw off. And so C.J. pulls the double steal and gets the easiest steal of his career following in the steps of Jacob Young there. So I think just having him on the baseball team, a gritty guy like that, is nice to have. I mean, and guys can carve out careers like that. You know, I mean, Adam Eaton, by the time he came to the Nationals, Eaton's better than what Jacob Young is. But those kind of guys have a spot. You know, those kind of guys that are gritty, can play some good defense. They don't have to hit 30 home runs. They're not the guys hitting in the middle of the order, but they're just the glue guys, right? They're the role players batting 7, 8, 9 that can make a difference for your ball club, especially with a guy with Jacob Young's speed that even if he's not in the lineup, he can make difference just becoming in a pinch running and stealing a bag. I mean, he's been so impressive to watch and fun to watch. And how can you not root for him? Like you said, with his story and a guy that really wasn't supposed to be anything. Now he's playing every day for the Nationals and batting over 300, batting 9th and stealing bags in front of CJ Abrams. I mean, he's got to be having a blast and it's a blast to watch him.
What I'm looking at here is that the league average OPS right now is 702, which would actually be the lowest since 2014 when it was 700. Now, that also is we're comparing the very beginning of the season and some of the cold weather and, you know, typically arms ahead of bats, right? So you want to wait and see what happens when the weather warms up in the last couple months of the season. Generally, the numbers will jump. But, 702 would be the lowest, you know, league OPS for a player since 2014. But I say that to tell you that right now, even though he's not hitting for a whole lot of power, you're talking about being almost 60 points above the league OPS average for Jacob Young, who's been tremendous. We got to mention the exploits here over the last 6 games of Nick Senzel, who was held in the yard in the 4th and final game of the series against the Marlins. But for Senzel, the former number 2 overall pick by the Reds, he had homered in 5 times in 5 games coming into play today. As we tape this after the game against the Marlins on Monday, he went 1-for-3 and walked. He was on base twice, so another productive game. He almost hit another home run, though. He just missed what would have been his 6th in 6 games. And what's hilarious about this for Nats fans that maybe don't know a ton about Senzel, that the knock on him mostly has been that he hasn't hit for any power. I mean, in Cincinnati, he played at Great American Ballpark. As a rookie, he hit 12 homers in sub 400 at bats, which is a decent, you know, power rate, 427 slug. He's never done that again. His highest slug since then was 399 last year when he homered 13 times, a career high, in 300 at bats. And that was, you know, close to a 20 to 25 homer pace if you play 162 games. But when you play the hot corner, that's nothing to write home about. And also, you know, again, he's homered. This is his home run counts by year. 12, 2, 1, 5, and 13 times. So as a top three pick who plays the corner infield, like that's not going to butter the bread. But for him to have gone on this tear where he had two homers on Sunday, you know, 5 and 5 games since getting healthy, and he's dealt with a couple different injuries, it's been pretty amazing to watch for the 28-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't expect to see this out of Nick Senzel, right? I mean, it's been really cool to see, and this is another one of those Rizzo signings where he's not a long-term, you know, option at third base, but you just see if you got something, and over this last week, he's been fantastic. So see if he can keep it up. I mean, he's got the pedigree, but we've kind of seen throughout his career that he hasn't lived up to that. But, I mean, he just missed a homer on Monday night. He hit one off the wall, and he was I believe he was the home run that put the Nationals in front after they were down 7-0. He came back and he was clutching that game. So maybe the Nats just need to play the Marlins all the time and they'll have the best stats in the world. But either way, it's not like it was just in the, you know, the Marlins series either. He hit some home runs outside of that. So it's cool to see what he's been doing. He's a guy that, I mean, we were kind of like, well, do we really need to see him with Lipscomb? But they're finding ways to get Lipscomb still in the lineup, get Senzel in there, and Senzel's been awesome.
Yeah, he has been. A few things about Senzel. He's hitting .230. His expected batting average is actually about .260. The OPS, though, because of all the home runs, is going to be high. So it's .943, still a limited amount of work, right? He's only had 40 plate appearances, like 38 at-bats, something like that, with a couple walks mixed in there. But he doesn't qualify for any of the, you know, metrics that you could look up because he just hasn't played enough. But if you look at some of where he would be with percentiles, like expected slug would be way up over 95th percentile, barrel percentage, you know, same thing up into the 90s. So that the sweet spot, like he's run into some really loud contact, expected wOBA's huge. He still has issues and he's going to with like some swing and miss, his whiff percentage, K percentage. He doesn't really walk. He's never going to be a guy that like doesn't chase. But I just think it's interesting that essentially he is running into a lot of very, very loud sweet spot contact right now. He's pulled 4 of the 5 home runs to left. He went the opposite way, right center for the other. And then, the spray chart on the season is 9 total hits. So it's 5 home runs. And then he's got, I think, 3 singles, a couple the other way. But basically, it's like it's a hilarious spray chart where he's got more balls that have left the yard than that have stayed in. But it's been a heck of a week and a good sign. You know, you get him going, they're able to get Lipscomb back up with the Gallo injury. Now you're able to get a little creative and move some guys around. Lipscomb's still getting opportunities at first base. You know, you're able to DH if you need to. So I care about Senzel from the standpoint of if he becomes trade bait, that's a huge win.
Yep.
Same as Winker, right? If you end up deciding, like, we found something, we're going to keep this guy, and I don't think you would with any of the veterans because it's not Lane Thomas, who's very young, you know, and I don't mean anymore as much as, like, his first year here a couple years back where you go, we could actually keep him. It's cheap. He's controllable for a few years. These guys are older and have, you know, lesser track records than Lane, who was mostly in the minors before that. So you kind of wanted to kick the tires. But Winker's got an .830 OPS, even though he's cooled off here. Now you're talking about 15 walks to 23 strikeouts. He's hitting about .280. He's getting on base almost 40% of the time, a team high. Like, Jesse Winker's had a hell of a start to the season here in the first month. He is overperforming. If you can continue to get power from Senzel, you know, he is a trade chip. So if you're Mike Rizzo, you're feeling really good about that, even though it hasn't all worked out with Gallo hitting .120 and on the shelf.
Well, and I think Senzel more so than Winker. Like, Winker's been an all-star before. I think that was kind of a, you know, maybe an aberration or an anomaly in of ways for him that season, and the Reds weren't necessarily that great. He had a really good year, but I think, you know, he's more of a guy that's kind of what you're seeing right now, maybe a little bit less than this. But so I don't think it's a huge surprise. I think it's something where he was injured and he came back and now you're seeing, okay, now it's a healthy Jesse Winker. I think if Nick Senzel gives you something where you could trade him, that's fantastic. I think all they were planning on is they were going to sign Nick Senzel to play third base until Brady House was ready, whether it was this year or next year. I think that's all they were planning on. They figured they'd get a guy that can just hang out and fill a spot. But if they can get something for him, I think that'd be making up even more, because you took a shot on Gallo. We've talked about that. You take a shot on Winker, but seeing Winker get back to being this player, like we've seen stretches of this from Winker before. 5 home runs in a week for Nick Senzel is not something we've seen a whole lot of. So if
more than he's had in almost every season. In his career.
So if you can see just little bits and pieces of this throughout the rest of the year, I mean, think about last year. Jamer Candelario is brought in. You're expecting just a lot of doubles. He ends up hitting a lot of homers. You flip him, you get DJ Hurz, Kevin Mate. They're not the top prospects in your organization, but you can add them in. Hurz is going to help out at the big league level at some point this year. Mate's been playing well, so you think you can just add one or two prospects each and every time. That's how you do it, and that's the perfect kind of guys you sign, and this, you know, timeline for an organization. And then hopefully down the line, you know, DJ Hurz, whether he's a fifth starter, he's coming out of the bullpen. Getting guys like that is how you fill in the holes for when Brady House and James Wood and all those guys are coming up to take their spots.
One other thing I would just want to point out about the power for the Nationals. Remember last year, they were dead last for most of the year in home runs. And you and I have said many times they're not going to be one of the leaders in home runs, and that's certainly the case. You know, the Orioles have hit 45 bombs this year. I wonder what that number would be if they didn't ruin their left field fence, by the way. The Yankees have hit 37 home runs. The Nats have 27. I bring this up to say that, you know, the Cardinals and White Sox have 18 as a team. That's dead last. And the Nats are ranked 20th, you know, in a tie there with Toronto, basically for like 19th or whatever. But my point is to say they're a home run away from basically being like 17th, right in the middle of the pack in the big leagues in home runs. So when you're number one in stolen bases, which philosophically is kind of, they turned up the faders on that in a massive way, knowing they weren't going to hit a lot of home runs, I think it's got to be a pleasant surprise, you know, that they're going to close April at almost 30 home runs. You know, they couldn't have expected 7 from CJ. Maybe you counted on a couple more from Gallo or something, but to get 5 from Senzel's, at least, you know, 3, if not 4 more than you were probably banking on from him. So I just think collectively as a club, that's probably a good sign.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazons of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Bang, zoom.
Now, specific to the last week, just to, you know, throw some love out, we mentioned Senzel's 4 home runs in the last calendar week here. He hit 5 over 5 games. Jacob Young this week hit .455 with a .1023 OPS, 10 for 22 at the plate, which is crazy. C.J. Abrams, 8 for his last 27, .296 at the plate, .945 OPS, which actually, as crazy as that week sounds, good, like, is down from his season totals. Trey Lipscomb, since being recalled in the last 6 games, 8 for 20, hitting .400 with a .928 OPS, and that was with, like, guessing wrong on a couple first pitches and just missing a couple balls he flew out to center with tonight, which I thought was interesting. Manessis has picked it up some. He's 7 for his last 29, which is a .240 average, which is up like 60 points from where he was coming into the last 10 days. Still no power. He hit a double on Monday to score a run, but OPS of about 600. And then Winker, interestingly enough, was probably their worst offensive player, one of them, this week in terms of OPS. As far as the pitching side, we should probably call some attention to some of the guys here in this Marlins series that threw well. So really nice bounce back outing from Jake Irvin on Monday to finish off the sweep. Irvin goes 6 innings. He ended up in the 6 innings, giving up 2 earned runs, both. He gave up a home run there at the end of his start, 84 pitches for him, 4 hits, 2 runs, 3 strikeouts, no walks. But you'll take 6 innings, 2 runs every time. Season ERA of 4.2. He got rocked by the Dodgers. That was the game, Toby, where they had, like, I think it was like 22 hits as a team, and I want to say 10 or 11 of them were off him, I believe. He got shelled. I was at that game. But, you know, that's really the one outing like that this year where Davey, that was the time he decided to just leave him in there and throw a bunch of pitches, weirdly enough. But another good outing. I mean, this has kind of been the norm for him this year. You could, I guess, take away if you want because it's the Marlins who aren't hitting. Okay, cool. He's basically been this 6-inning quality start guy, you know, 75% of the time for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's crazy because you look at his ERA and it's just above 4, but it feels like he's pitched even better than that, which is crazy to think about.
That Dodgers game just destroyed his earned run average.
And this is a guy that we didn't expect to stick in the rotation last year, and now we're kind of, even going into this year, it's like, yeah, Jake Irvin's kind of like the last guy in, but he's pitched really well. He's been one of their best starters. I mean, you look at the starts so far for him, he went 5 innings to open the year on the against the Reds, 5 innings, 3 runs. Then you have the Phillies game, which was 6 innings, 4 runs. If I recall, it felt like he pitched better than that line. And then in the A's series, 6 innings, 1 run at Dodger Stadium, 6 innings, scoreless. And then the outing, like you mentioned, at Nats Park against the Dodgers, 4 2/3, 12 hits, 6 earned runs. And then he followed it up with a good outing today as we record on Monday night. 6 innings, only the 2 earned runs, gave up that home run to Jazz Chisholm in the 6th inning. But yeah, I mean, it feels like he's pitched better than even his line. So you take what Jake Irvin has given you. He's been really impressive. And I think adding that cutter has been a real difference maker for him, to the point that he's gone from being just, you know, a whatever kind of guy to now being like, oh, okay, maybe they have something here.
Speaking of whatever kind of guy, Patrick Corbin got demolished in his start in Miami. He gave up 6 runs in the first inning, 7 in the first couple innings. He actually had thrown 5 1/3 scoreless, believe it or not, against the Dodgers in his previous outing, but we won't have to spend much time there. I'd rather talk about Mitchell Parker. We saw him again, 4 innings, 6 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts at Miami. So that was, you know, the first time he didn't get through 5. He gave up 1 run. It'll take that every time he pitches. And for the first time, he walked batters. But how about now we're 16 innings in, 14 strikeouts and 2 walks, and a 1.69 for the 24-year-old who had very, very little expectation when he got called up.
Yeah, I mean, he battled in this outing. This is the first one where it felt like he really had to work. He's looked really good in his other outings, but, you know, only going the 4 innings, throwing the 82 pitches, giving up the 6 hits, but scattering them, right? You only give up the 1 run. So that's kind of impressive for him to do that. And obviously it's against the Marlins team, like we've talked about a million times, but they're still a major league ball club. He went out there and did his job. And look, sometimes you're not going to have your stuff. You're going to have to go out there and just find a way, and to hold them to 1 run when he clearly wasn't on his A game, even though he only went through the 4 innings. You'll take that, especially from a guy, again, you know, it feels like we talked about this with Irvin a lot last year. We're talking about again this year. Mitchell Parker was supposed to be like, all right, maybe he starts 1 or 2 games. And now it's like, well, I mean, he's pitching well enough that, You're not rushing to take him out of the rotation. So, again, this is, I think, a sign of the rebuild going in the right direction when these sorts of guys can come up. And we're not saying they're going to be aces of the staff, but when they can be competent, that's so different from what the Nationals have had for so long when they'd call a guy up and it was like, all right, he's here for one start. He's going to get shelled and then he'll go back down to the minors. No, I mean, Mitchell Parker is pitching well enough that you're like, all right, if he needs to stick around for a little bit longer, you can. You're not forcing him out of the rotation. So, again, I think it's just showing that this organization's going in the right direction, seeing a Jake Irvin build off of last year onto this year, and then seeing Mitchell Parker come up as, you know, he was supposed to be too, Grant, where it was all lined up for Jackson Rutledge to come up and take this spot, and then Rutledge got hit by the comebacker, so Mitchell Parker gets thrown into this spot, and he's done really well.
It's funny somehow. Sometimes those things work themselves out. But Parker, again, give him a thumbs up. Mackenzie Gore threw the getaway day against the Dodgers. Not overpowering by any means, but effective. One run, six innings, seven hits. Just four strikeouts, which for him is low, but he only walked two. And, you know, they gave up, you know, seven hits, as I said, a 333 average against. Like, he got out of jams, man. Memory serves, he got out of four straight innings with double plays. He had runners on just about all game long. It was the anti-Mackenzie Gore outing, right? A lot of the times he's like nasty, shoves, dominates, and then somehow it's a bloop and a blast, or he'll give up two runs, or, you know, run will come home after he leaves the game, and the line will look worse normally than like what he actually threw. I thought this was the opposite, where he was kind of in it, in the soup early and often throughout much of his outing, and still only one run earned over six innings because of the four double plays, including a really nice play in the outfield by Jacob Young. And then we got to give some love to Trevor Williams, who I guess we should start calling Cy Williams. I mean, Trevor Williams, one run, five innings, five hits, and he walked two and struck out one. Like, it's not fun to watch Trevor Williams necessarily. He's not going to miss bats. Like, the stuff's not nasty. This is all going to come crashing down presumably very soon. But Trevor Williams has been the most consistent and effective pitcher in the rotation throughout the season, starting all the way back his first start against Pittsburgh, pitched into the sixth inning, two runs. Then against San Francisco on the road, five innings, one run. At Oakland, five and a third, three runs. That was his worst start of the year. Then against Houston, six innings, one run. And against the Marlins, five innings, one run. And he's done it really economically. Like, he's only thrown above 81 pitches once. So he easily could have gone seven a couple times, six a couple more times, maybe eight. But Davey has not asked him to do anything a third time through for good reason. You kind of take whatever he gives you and run with it. But I just point out, you know, the few pitches, because it is, I think, at least worth noting that it's not like he's throwing 95 pitches to get five or six innings worth of outs. He's generally throwing like 76 to 80 pitches and doing it.
Yeah, and I think it just shows you part of the reason why this team has a respectable record at 500 now is because, for the most part, aside from Patrick Corbin, the starting pitching has been fairly solid. Like, Josiah Gray struggled. He's on the injured list now, but Josiah Gray kind of struggled, but Williams has been solid. Parker's been solid. Irvin's been solid. Gore's been pretty good. Corbin's kind of been Corbin, right? I mean, what we've seen the last couple of years. So hopefully he can get things figured out. But just real quick, going back to Mackenzie Gore, I thought this was interesting. Kevin Franzen brought it up on the broadcast, I believe, when he was pitching against the Dodgers. If you look at Mackenzie Gore by inning, his first innings in five games so far, he hasn't allowed a run. In the third inning, he hasn't allowed a run. In the fourth inning, he hasn't allowed a run. In the fifth inning, he's only allowed one. In the sixth inning, he's allowed, I believe, two or something of that sort. Second inning, he's allowed seven. I don't know what it is about that second inning for Mackenzie Gore, but he struggles so badly in the second inning.
That
and
feels
then he locks
fluky,
back in.
Right? I mean, does that mean, like, could that even mean anything? Is it like, maybe he's a guy where the adrenaline wears off a little bit and you got to get yourself up the next inning? Like, that's weird. It almost seems like it'd be more telling if it was the first or the last inning, right? That's kind of strange.
I don't know if it's something where he's amped up coming out of the bullpen to start the game and he's ready to roll and he's, you know, we've seen him juiced up, right? He's throwing 98 in the first inning and then he has to go sit down, and then coming out, he just doesn't have that same juice, and then he fires himself back up for the third and kind of locks back in. I don't know what it is, but I think the big thing for Gore is, you know, I think that's just an interesting stat. I don't know that there's a whole lot to take out of it. But, you know, you want to see the guys take steps, right? And sometimes it's just hard to be patient and see, like, we see the potential with Gore and we want him to just be there, right? You're like, I see how good he can be. Can he just be there right now? And it's not always that case with players. So, you know, going from last year to this year, what was the growth we wanted to see? We talked about it before the season. Stop giving up the touchdowns like he talked about on your guys' show, Grant and Danny, last year. Stop giving up the 6 and 7 run innings and letting issues compound. I don't think we've seen that so far this year in 5 starts. You know, when things have gone bad, he's been able to limit the damage. So I think you're seeing growth there. The next step for him is stop throwing 30 pitch innings. Even if you're only giving up one run, you're still throwing 30 and 40 pitches and you're shortening your outings. So I think just for him, seeing those little bits of growth throughout the year, I think is going to be important. And I think early on, we're seeing that step where he's not imploding like he did at times last year. As he continues to get more comfortable with avoiding those big innings, can he get it so that he's more efficient? I don't know if that's pitching to contact a little bit more. I don't know if that's just living in the zone more, finding another put-away pitch because, you know, teams foul off so many pitches of his. I don't know exactly what that is for him, but pitch efficiency is something I want to see him work on. But I am glad to see that he's kind of eliminated those huge innings as well.
Make sure you're following Toby on X. He does a good job breaking down the Nats and posting quality baseball content at Toby Altizer, T-O-B-I underscore A-L-T-I-Z-E-R. And I'm at Grant H. Paulson. Let's move on to the minor leagues for a couple of minutes here. Well, you know what? Before we even do that, let's look at the bullpen for a second. This week, I thought Derek Law was very good. 4 appearances, a 1.5 ERA, 1 run, pitched almost 6 innings, and he struck out 10 batters with 1 walk. He was pretty lights out. Jacob Barnes has been called up. He's been good. 3 1/3 innings of scoreless baseball. Kyle Finnegan had 3 appearances, 3 shutout, 3 strikeouts. Dylan Floro has been magnificent all year. 4 innings, 2 hits, 3 Ks, no walks this week. I mean, Dylan Floro, by the way, I don't know if anybody's noticing this, 13 appearances now, a 0.6 ERA, 14 innings, and a 1.07 whip. The 33-year-old, I don't know if there's such a thing as like a crafty righty, dude's got all-star numbers early on. He's been great.
Yeah, I really like Floro. That's why I really like that signing. It felt like you set yourself up with a 7-8-9 of Floro, Harvey, and Finnegan. And Finnegan's kind of gone back to being the guy that we knew for a majority of last year after he struggled early on in the season. But I think
he always does. He has that horrendous first appearance where he gives up a homer and 4 runs or whatever. And then he like doesn't give up a run for a month, basically. It's back-to-back years of this.
And I think it's interesting. We've seen already through just the 28 games on the schedule that Derek Law is Davey's guy. When it's not the 7th, 8th, or 9th inning and he has to turn to the bullpen, he's going to Derek Law. It seems like Derek Law pitches in every single game, but he's been, for the most part, effective. He's had some bad outings, but when you pitch as much as he has early on this season, you're going to have some ups and downs. But I've been thrilled with what you saw this past week with him as well. So the bullpen, like we talked about, I think it can be a strength. It's largely about health with the bullpen. And so, you know, I think if they can keep these guys healthy, I think you can depend on more than just the 1 or 2 guys like it felt like all of last year.
I don't really get it from a stuff standpoint with Floro. Because supposedly, if you look at Savant, I looked this up yesterday, his 4-seam fastball and his 2-seam fastball are the exact same velocity. Like his 4-seamer is 89.5, and so is his 2-seamer. His slider is about 82. His changeup's about 83, but he's down 2 miles an hour from last year. But I just think he keeps teams off balance really well. I don't know. Like he throws the 2-seamer about 42% of the time, the 4-seamer 26% of the time, the slider 20% of the time, and then even throws the 4th pitch, the changeup. He's thrown almost 25 of them this year, about 12% of the time. So it's almost like a starter's repertoire in a way, and he keeps you guessing. He keeps you off balance. But he's the kind of guy, and this is not meant to belittle him at all, like I never understand it. You know, like I would never sign him or like be seeking him. I'm looking for dudes that throw 98 with a wipeout slider. And guys like him are super effective. You know, those Brandon Kinsler, you know, like pitchers, true definition of pitchability. But it's been cool to watch. He's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, he's just one of those guys where you don't, like you said, he never overpowers dudes, but he just misses their barrel, right, and keeps the ball on the ground. So he's been impressive. Hopefully he can keep it up. And I think it's just nice to have more than one or two options. And I think it was a savvy move by Mike Rizzo to bring in Floro to help out in the back end of the bullpen this year, because, like you said, he's been very effective for the team so far this year.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Long gone.
Really good news on the minor league front from Robert Hassel, who's been on an absolute tear, just to break things down since our last pod, essentially, but maybe even back a little further. We'll go back 10 days. Hassel, 8 for 25 at the plate. That is a 320 batting average, which is 830 OPS. His hot streak actually goes back longer than that. In that time, he's drawn six walks. He's gotten on base a bunch, but his walk rate over a week and a half of 18.2 is best among Nats prospects. His batting average of 320 behind only Darren Baker, Lipscomb, who's been promoted among the Nats prospects, and I guess Drew Millis, but that was only in a couple of games at AAA after being sent back down. So Hassel really picking it up, which you wanted to see. Other notable prospects who have performed well over the last week and change: James Wood has 14 total bases, tied for the lead among Nats prospects over the last 10 calendar days. He's 11 for 37 at the plate in that time. That's a 297 average, 745 OPS. He had really cooled off. He went through a funk after he was white hot, and he's out of that now. He's been much, much better. Walk rate is down. He has not been drawing his walks. But still, even in this stretch here, a strikeout rate, which is not low by any means, but at 27%, like, perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with that. The big-time bat in terms of power here recently has been Brady House. He's the only prospect in the system who's got two homers over the last 10 days. Five RBI from Israel Pineda, Kevin Mate, who they got in the Cubs deal with DJ Herz leading the system. House and Baker have four. James Wood and Yoandy Morales have three RBI in that time. In terms of on-base percentage over the last 10 days, Hassel at 470, Lipscomb before the call-up 452, Wood 370, Baker 361, and Dalen Lyle in A-plus ball, a 345 on-base percentage, hitting 280 during the stretch over the last 10 days. Your notable players at the plate.
Well, so the encouraging part for me, Grant, is you mentioned it starting off with Robert Hassel. I think he's back to being Robert Hassel, right? Like, it's clear that the injury really affected him last year, and it was something where we were very discouraged by what we were seeing, and now he's looking like Robert Hassel again. You know, an average around 300, an OPS around 750. I don't know that he's an all-star caliber player. Like, we've talked about this before. I think he's just a guy that you can depend on day in, day out, batting in the six or the seven hole or wherever you want to put him, maybe even up in the leadoff spot, whatever the case may be. But he's not going to be your superstar, but he's going to be a very important role player. And he looks like he's back to that. His bat's looking more like the Robert Hassel that we all expected of him. And also, I want to mention Dylan Cruz basically missed a week with a hamstring injury, but he luckily got back into the lineup over the last couple of days. So interested to see how he can bounce back from that and see if he can get back on track.
By the way, real quick, on that, they kept saying, like, oh, he's fine. Oh, he'll play tomorrow. Oh, he'll play tomorrow. And I say they were saying, they weren't telling me that. But Mark Zuckerman, I think, was doing a lot of the reporting on this for MassinSports.com. And he kind of kept saying, yeah, they think he'll be in the lineup tomorrow. And it just kept not happening and not happening. And my ire was kind of raising, and I was getting a little more confused. But to your point, he is back in the lineup. So I guess we can breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, hopefully he's someone that can get things figured out, maybe having a little bit of time off. Obviously, you don't want him injured, but maybe having a little time off, regroup after a long spring and everything can help him out. But yeah, James Wood cooled down a little bit. But I mean, like you said, James Wood, fantastic. It just, we can't talk enough about James Wood. I'm so excited. And maybe with a little bit of that lull, it slows down the timeline a little bit. But basically, as much as we talk about CJ Abrams, and I love CJ, like, I just want to see James Wood in a Nats uni at Nats Park as well. Like, I'm thrilled to see CJ, but man, do I want to see James Wood batting third for the Nats and just hitting tanks into the right field bleachers.
Yeah, it's coming very, very soon. It's coming. All right, let's go to the pitching side in the system. So really, technically, among guys that have started the last week or so, you've got five arms in the system that are ranked in the top 30. Parker, who's been at the big league level, who we talked about. So then four guys in the minors, and that's Arlene Susana, who they got in the Soto deal, DJ Hers, who they got from the Cubs last year in the Candelario deal, Cole Henry, who they drafted in the second round out of LSU, and Jackson Rutledge, the former first-round pick. So first things first on Rutledge, just to get it out of the way. He's coming back. You mentioned this, but he got hit by a comebacker and was kind of dinged, or else maybe he would have been called up to the big leagues when Parker got called up. His last outing, he got shelled trying to come back. Six hits, nine runs earned. That's a lot, man. Nine runs earned. That's going to take a little while to fix your ERA at that point. Yeah. But that was a two-inning outing. We saw him wear one, too. Remember in that prospect game at Nationals Park where he came in, he got hit around, then he went and sat down, and because it was just an exhibition, they brought him back out later, and he got hit around a little more. I still think, you know, there's some back-of-the-rotation upside there, you know, because of the size and the fastball breaking ball. You know, if you told me he's going to be a high-leverage reliever, I would be fine with that, too, but I mean, we're not that far removed from him having had a pretty damn good spring and, you know, looked like a major league starter. You and I have seen him in the minor leagues, and I think the night we saw him, we were both really impressed. And he pitches inside. He attacks guys. He's super closed off. He's hard to pick the ball up off of. So it has not been a particularly good start to his season. I wouldn't say otherwise. But, you know, he's not a whole lot different, in my opinion, like than Jake Irvin when he got called up. And I think the Jake Irvin you see now is way better than that. So I'm not any longer saying, I'm not saying right now he's the same as Irvin. Like the day Irvin got called up or the day Mitchell Parker got called up is kind of the same level of maybe prospect or expectation for Rutledge. And in fact, for a lot of the publications, he's actually ranked a lot higher. I just think that's because he's a first round pick, to be honest with you. I've never, like, I didn't see him and then see Jake Irvin and Parker or whatever in the minors and think Rutledge was head and shoulders better. But I think when you're a first-round pick, you get kind of the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, and it sucked for Rutledge with the comebacker because I don't know if you saw the video of it. He gets hit. I think it was in, like, the ankle. And I don't know if it was just out of pain, but he, like, spiked his glove. And part of me thinks, like, I was about to be in the big leagues again. I was about to go pitch in the big leagues again, and this happens? Like, he just looked so frustrated, felt bad for him. But he's also had some decent outings down in the minors. I mean, like you said, I think he's an uncomfortable at-bat, and he's going to have to find his role. I don't know that long-term for the actual big league club it's going to be in a starting capacity. But, I mean, 6'8", he loves to pitch inside with the fastball. Heck, he was doing it in the prospect game, and Lane Thomas was looking into the first base dugout like, Dave, are you going to tell him to knock it off or what? So it's an uncomfortable at-bat, and hopefully he can figure something out. But, I mean, I think he's still got potential to help this team out. Hopefully he can get things back on track. But he has had some in the last month or so, basically, with that prospect game, with that game. He's had a couple where he's just absolutely worn it.
Shout out to my guy Cole Henry trying to do the unthinkable and come back from the old thoracic outlet, the 24-year-olds in AA, where, remember, his first start of the year, he gave up three hits, four runs, three earned, and didn't get out of the second inning. He has now pitched nine innings in three outings, three frames apiece, where he has not given up an earned run in a row here. Altoona, Richmond, and Erie. So that's nine innings of four-hit ball. Think about it like a start, a complete game four-hitter with one unearned run, ERA of zero, five walks, and eight strikeouts in those nine innings. So very, very good to see Cole Henry, who's been pitching every 6 days, due to pitch again in a couple more days, not give up a run here over his last three.
Yeah, it's really cool. He just seems like thrilled to be back out on the mound, right? When we talk with him at spring training, he's just a nice as could be guy. So you love to root for him, and to see him pitch well is awesome. I don't know what his long-term role is, because you would think they're trying to build him back up into being a starter. So we'll see if he can get back to that. But even if he's just that guy that pitches two or three innings out of the pen and he can be effective in that role, you would take that. And I mean, it's a shame with everything that's happened, but it looks like he is kind of gaining some of that effectiveness back, because this is a guy that was looking like maybe they'd found a steal in the second round, and then he has to have thoracic outlet. And so if he can come back and help you, even if it's just out of the pen, I think it's a plus, and he's got the stuff to do it. It's just, can he recover from that injury?
Speaking of the stuff to do it, don't look now, but DJ Hurz is at it again. 5 innings, 1 hit, 1 run against Toledo, and then 5 innings, 3 hits, 1 unearned run against, I can't even remember who Rochester was playing more recently, but doesn't matter. 10 innings of 1 earned baseball with 10 strikeouts in his last 2 starts. His average against for the season is now sitting at around 172, I believe, which is kind of where he's been through most of his career. You know, his issue is walks, and they've been there. 13 walks in 17 innings for him on the season, now with 17 strikeouts in those 17 innings. But if you just look over the last 10 days and you see those 2 starts, he has been absolutely dynamite. And then Harleen Susana, the A-ball, I'm ready for him to get elevated, by the way. He feels like he might as well have bought a house in Fredericksburg at this point. he just lives there full time, parts of 3 seasons now. But 4 innings, 4 hits, 2 runs, and 7 Ks for him with just 1 walk in his last start. Now, he did have 2 in a row where the numbers weren't great, but he's only really had 1 start where the walk number was crooked, where he had 2 walks and 2 1/3. And to me, that's the main thing I'm looking at for him is, are you throwing strikes? So he's given up too many hits for his stuff. Like, we saw him blowing away big league hitters with 102 in that prospect game. For him to have 16 hits allowed in 12 innings is jarring to me and shouldn't happen. But he's got 17 strikeouts in that time. So I want him to not walk anybody. He's only walking basically a batter every 3 innings, which is much better than it was last year. The average against at 308 is very strange to me.
So with Susana, I just want them to accept the fact that he's not going to be a starting pitcher and fast track him as maybe a 1 or 2.
There's no reason to do that yet, right?
No, I definitely not. But I mean,
they probably know that behind the scenes, I would think.
But you wonder the effectiveness of a guy. I know it's in single A, you know, so maybe it's something they can work on when they get him a little closer to the big leagues. But the difference in having to think, I'm going to go out here and pitch 5 innings versus I'm going to come out here and blow away 4 or 5 batters like he did when he pitched in the prospect game. I mean, I know it's a prospect game. It's still basically a glorified spring training, but he was 1 fouled 102 mile an hour pitch away from having an immaculate inning against the Nats lineup. I think it was Joey Gallo. I can't remember who the second guy is, but Jacob Young fouled off the third, he was the third batter. So I just, when you look at him, and if I think of Harleen Susana, I thought it when they traded for him, I thought it all along. I don't know that it's something that they need to do right now, but I do wonder, like, at what point do you just say, all right, enough with trying to build up stamina and all this. You go out there, you throw as hard as you can for, you know, 25 pitches, and then we'll call it a day. Like, he's got the stuff to do that. And he doesn't, like, to me, if you're sitting there trying to work on a third and a fourth pitch, I don't know. It's a waste of time to me. Like, he's going to throw 102 and throw a nasty slider, and I don't need anything else, because you're going to be a 8th or 9th inning guy, and you're going to throw gas, and people are going to be uncomfortable at the plate because you don't really know where it's going, and they don't either.
Miller with the A's.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Like, he'd be awesome if he could be a starter. And maybe it's something like, remember Jordan Hicks? He was a reliever, and now they're trying him back out as a starter in San Francisco. Maybe he could go that track. I don't know. But to me, he just screams reliever, and at some point, I don't need to see him trying to go 3 and 4 and 5 innings when I think if he can go out there and be effective for 1 and just dial in on that, I'd take that.
If you guys would like to leave us a comment, 5-star review, we will read your comments. We are not above that. If you say something nice, we'll definitely read your comments, because we're definitely not above that. But kidding aside, please rate and review and leave a comment. It really helps us. Please spread the word. A couple of listeners tweeted out the podcast last week, including Chris in Hyattsville. We really appreciate that. Any kind of ability to get the word out is awesome. So thank you, thank you, thank you for that. We're trying to grow this thing and just make sure that we're able to keep doing it. Busting Loose Baseball has been a lot of fun for us, and we're going to hopefully we got a triple up this week because I was under the weather. You were busy with some family in town.
Yep.
So we didn't get our second pod out in the last week because I was losing my voice, but maybe we'll go three deep. We'll do a little, we'll find a way to do a emergency pod maybe at some point this week and make up for it. But thanks to everyone for listening. For producer Darris and Toby, I'm Grant saying so long. Episode 112 of Bustin' Loose Baseball in the books.